when I was trying to figure out what to use my short 5 minutes for, I realized that just in the last year, in our country, so much has changed, right, from the economy to the White House, that it might be a good time for us to do a little taking stock ourselves and figure out what has changed for us in the last 10 and 15 years that many of us have been doing this work. And I started to think back to those sort of early gatherings where we'd get sometimes up to 15 people in a room. We'd go, whoa, that was number 15, you know? So, and when we got into the double digits, you know, we were really celebrating. And, you know, we drank lots of really bad coffee, not this nice chicory stuff you can get up in your room, and pastries that violated our right to health on a consistent basis. And you think back, and they were, so you picture these like 15 crazy people in a room drinking bad coffee, hypercaffeinated, and kicking around these ideas about, yeah, human rights in the United States. What does that mean? What do we do with that? And there'd always be somebody, and it, you know, we had some, these people who were pioneers were very inspirational, you know, and some of them are here, Loretta, you know, one of the people that inspired me to go into this work, and Malika Dutt, I remember her early on, one of the first presentations I heard where she said, we have to build a human rights culture, and I swear we didn't coordinate, but that's what they were saying, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and I said, great, let's do that. What is that, you know, what does that mean? Where do I research? What do I write? You know, what do I do? And that was a struggle, kind of figure out what does it mean to build a human rights culture. But that was an early part of the strategy. And I asked myself this morning as I was finishing my talk, which I should have finished a week ago, have we succeeded? Have we succeeded in doing that, and to what extent? And like many of the early strategies, I think we have a yes but not yet answer. Right? I think our activist culture, our social movements have really started to deeply engage with human rights. We have people in this room and out in our community working on all kinds of issues in all kinds of communities in all different sectors. People said we should do that, and we actually did it. You know, there's a lot of things we said we were going to do, and we didn't always believe ourselves, but we actually accomplished some of the ones that were very significant, and that was one of them. Where we haven't succeeded as much is, you know, moving our media. Right, you have some cracks in that wall that we need to bring down, but they're not really, even our progressive media is not giving voice to this. And although we've made strides with the general public, as I'm sure you'll hear from the opportunity agenda in more detail later, they embrace the core concepts, even though they don't fully understand them. We haven't moved our political leaders enough yet either, right? Even when they talk rights, they seem even more confused than the general public in terms of what it means. Yeah. You have a right to health insurance. You have a right to buy it from an insurance company. And we will make sure that that insurance company has enough customers. So we have a little work to do with them, right? But we've made progress because it's now part of our social justice fabric. And it's starting to move out into the water stream, as they say. And I think we can really collectively feel proud of that accomplishment because many of us who even said we should do that thought we were crazy, but felt that it was important to try nonetheless. The other piece of the strategy was sort of building new alliances, working on all the issues somehow at once, and moving them all forward. And I think we've made a lot of progress on alliances. You have the Poverty Initiative with Liz Theo Harris here bringing groups across issues. You have the CIW, who you saw in the film, who works with like everything from the religious community to students to sweatshop groups on the Immokalee campaign. You have Right to the City, who's brought people from all over the country together to build a broader agenda, and you have the network. So we built alliances, the U.S. Human Rights Network. We built alliances, and the Bringing Human Rights Network. See, it's just like 5 minutes is not enough to name everybody. But we haven't really figured out, and I think this is the big next stage for us that we really need to struggle with, how to link those issues in a way that's strategic and actually informs the advocacy. We have these great opportunities like around the Race Convention or the Blueprint, but they're kind of sporadic. We need a systematic approach to integrate our issues strategically. And if anybody knows how to do that, please talk to me at lunch. But I do think that's the thing we need to struggle with next, because we've built the alliances, but we haven't linked them. In 1 minute, I'm going to say that the other things were reframing the debates, which I think we have done in a lot of ways, strengthening the UN mechanisms for our work, globalizing the advocacy, and embedding in our laws. Now, we had a great show of force coordinated by the U.S. Human Rights Network with the race convention, but we have a task as important as it is difficult to figure out follow-up. You know, so there's still a lot of challenges. We had spectacular victories like the Roper case, but they unfortunately they stand out as exceptions. And we've built these links across borders, and you'll hear more later about like tsunami survivors and Katrina survivors, but we haven't figured out how to integrate it into strategic advocacy. So we have a lot of things that we need to take to the next level. What I wanted to close out with by saying is that some of the ideas around human rights in the U.S. have been more successful than others. Some we'd rather forget that we were promoting at a certain point. Some of the strategies have been more creative and insightful than others, because we all stumble. But for all the debate about what's most important, legal mechanisms, media, working within communities, working across communities, working with the lawyers, you know, for all the debate about what we need to do or how the hell we're going to do it all together, in my sort of 10 or 15 years doing this, I think it's about 13, what I think really has, to me, has been shown to be the most important is to have this sort of growing cadre of people who are committed to stick and stay. And this is, I think, our greatest accomplishment. We have built this growing cadre of people, activists, lawyers, our supporters, our donors, who have committed to stick and stay, who have finally said, we're going to be in this for the long haul until every person in the United States has their full range of human rights. And that, not which specific strategy, not which wall we scale at which point, that, I think, is where our success will lie. And you all are a big part of that committed and growing cadre of people. And I wanted to thank you for that. And I wanted to especially acknowledge the younger activists, like we heard last night from the Border Network, because it makes those of us who are starting to get a little older feel like the work we tried to do to lay some groundwork, hopefully to create a base for accomplishments that others will then achieve, all that bad coffee, all those bad carbs, were worth it. Thanks.
Good morning. Just in case you forgot my name by now, since I was introduced a while ago, my name is Maisie Chin, and I'm the co-founder and director of an independent grassroots community organizing parent group called CADRE, and it was intentionally named that, but it also stands for Community Asset Development Redefining Education. And I am not here by myself. I want to just acknowledge if Roslyn could raise her hand, because Roslyn is one of our core parent leaders, and she's here with me. And I also have to take 2 seconds of my precious time to acknowledge the fact that we also would not be here, and we would not have the privilege and honor of speaking truth to power in the way that we're doing so without Nasri and without the Moritz Gilmore Foundation to help us really take the stories that we heard on the ground to a whole nother level of action. So I'm a community organizer, and if there's one thing that came out of the election of Barack Obama, it's that everyone knows, supposedly, what community organizing is now. So at least when I say what I do, people have a reference point. However, the thing that we always say is about speaking truth to power. But I think for the purpose of what I'm going to say today, I just want to ground it by saying it's how we speak the truth. And even as community organizers, it takes art and science to make sure that the people whose rights are being violated are the ones that are speaking and directing and crafting their own solutions. And if there's one thing I can say as far as building a human rights culture is that, and I may be a little biased, but I feel that community organizing specifically with the principles that we already believe in, it's time for us to step it up and really embrace an overarching framework of human rights, because that's where we need to build a constituency that has been completely untapped, and that's actually the people whose rights are being violated on a daily basis. And I do know that there are a number of people in the room who that's what we live for. And it's really time to merge forces, and it's time to take this to the next level. And, you know, CADRE started off, you know, in a living room. I had worked in school reform, and I joined forces with a parent who had multiple kids in the system. And we really, you know, she really, actually, let me just be honest, she actually saw a movement of thousands of parents. And it wasn't the typical struggle that we really want to fight. It was specific to fight the exclusion of African-American Latino children from the educational process, but not just school and college, but life itself. And I think I can say honestly that we never started our effort and our journey just to kind of secure economic gain for more people, although that's important, just to get people into college, which is of course important. But there is a genocide of another kind that's happening within our school walls, where children are being dehumanized and stripped of their identities. And worse yet, when you go to defend them and protect them, the parents are also stripped of their humanity. And that's really what we were attempting to do. We would go door to door and find out that if there was one common thread between both African-American and Latino parents was that they were not being treated with dignity and respect, and that their rights were being violated, especially when they defended their children, who were the ones in trouble, the ones not doing well in school, and the ones that just were a handful and they really didn't care to deal with them anymore. And that's where we started. That's kind of in that frame of mind we met Nesri because you know, their work they had done, some of the founders had done a report around education that really spoke to this higher standard for education, that it was supposed to contribute to the full development of yourself, of you as a person, and that you were supposed to feel humane and that the system was humane in its treatment and education of you. And quite frankly, let me make sure I don't go over my time, but Nesri really helped us, and Liz and Kathy, helped us learn how to take the stories that we were hearing, turning into and leveraging them. At first, it was just to tell the story, and some stars aligned, and we were able to change a policy with it at the same time within a year or two. And what it is, we learned documentation, human rights documentation, how to frame the things that were going on in the schools as human rights violations. And so when children were being humiliated in discipline process, when parents were being humiliated in their advocacy, when there was due process violation, we were able to frame that as right as a violation of the human right to dignity. When children were being suspended for speaking out or speaking back or not looking right or, you know, not being able to deal with their trauma at home and suddenly become this A student in the classroom, you know, and as a result of that, their behavior created disruption. When they were kicked out and suspended and needs were not identified and needs were not addressed and parents were not even called, you know, we saw that as violation of the human right to education. Not yet even a quality education, just an education. And then when parents, of course, were misinformed and given the runaround and lied to about how to defend their children, it was certainly a violation of their human right to participate. And we collected those stories into a people's hearing, and with that we were able to leverage and force the LA Unified School District into a corner to actually not back down from a progressive discipline policy that was on the table at the time. And so we kind of had some lucky breaks here and there. But I will say that we did get in the media, and our parents were very much present in making sure that LA Unified thought about the rights of children, and that we got to frame the issue of dropout and discipline as pushout. And that was really, really important for us. As far as talking about the outcomes and the challenges that we face, I will just say that there are many. Both we are able to make a policy change, but the challenges remain in making sure that policy is implemented, as with all things. And again, I will express my bias about community organizing, where I think that that is where we need to butter our bread, so to speak, where what we are about to do at CADRE is to train our parents. We're doing it now to monitor the policy. It's not sexy. It's not all exciting, but we're about to make it sexy. We're going to make it cool to monitor. You know, and that's really the missing piece we have. I mean, we need to get out in the street, get into the trenches, you know, get into the potholes and actually help people really use their rights to monitor, not just learn about what's right and what should be. And if there's anyone that knows what should be, is obviously the folks that we work with and the folks whose rights are being violated. And so it doesn't take a whole lot to get there. And we need to expedite that process, develop leaders, and really mount a full frontal attack on having all of us, from all the issues that we work on, begin to use our stories as data, as research, and to use that to hold our institutions accountable. And again, you know, for us, the crisis in education is not just, it's about an institutional responsibility, which is also very, very key. And organizing parents for us is, it's really been about giving parents the ability to participate in their own solutions and from a place that really speaks to their full desires for their children. Not what this institution tells you you should be focused on, but the full humanity of their children. And as one of our parents has said often, you know, we just want to live. And that's really what our work is about in changing the schools in Los Angeles. Thank you very much.